Welcome, baseball fans, to episode 13 of The Natch GM Show, the only podcast from The Natch GM Radio Network. I am your host, Ryan Sullivan, editor-in-chief of NatchGM.com. My distinguished guest this week is Chris Mellon. Chris was an original writer at SoxProspects.com. It is now in charge of scouting and player development at Baseball Prospectus. One of the best talent evaluators around, I am excited to have the man known as Diesel joining me this week. Chris, welcome to the Natch GM Show.
Hey, thanks, Ryan. Appreciate coming on.
First of all, before we dive in, congratulations on the new promotion, and I'm very excited to see you moving on up in the world.
Hey, thanks. You know, it's been a little bit of a whirlwind these last couple weeks, and you know, behind the scenes, we've kind of been preparing for three to four weeks before that announcement became official from Jason Parks. But I'm really looking forward to it. I know Nick Falaris, my co-director, he's really looking forward to it. We've been attached at the hip really for these last 6 weeks, and we've been attached, you know, going through some other things too with content and whatnot. So we're really excited to continue to bring everybody this quality of content that they come to expect from Baseball Prospectus, and we also, I think, we have some wrinkles and some new things coming down the line as well.
Well, I've been a longtime reader of yours since, like I said, the Sox Prospects days, but before we get going, can you kind of briefly describe your career path to some of the audience who may not know you quite as well?
Yeah, so back in the mid-2000s is kind of when I got into prospect writing, and it was really raw. It was really rough and raw in the beginning, but I had a buddy in college that I played football with, actually, that he was also a baseball pitcher, and he ended up signing with the Red Sox as an undrafted free agent. So one day, you know, I had been looking, you know, I was looking to find some information on him to see how he was doing beyond the box score, so to speak, and I stumbled across the website SoxProspects.com. And I had already, and that website, you know, that was the first couple of years of their existence that when I found it, and I had been going to some games, you know, I had been traveling for my professional job, and I was going to some minor league games just to kind of kill time, and I started meeting some people and really getting appreciation for that part of the game, the development aspect. And it really just kind of snowballed from there. There was a couple of people, you know, Jacoby Ellsbury, Kevin Youkilis, Dustin Pedroia, over a few names that, you know, I had seen come up through the, started to see at Lowell, for instance, come up through the ranks, and I had gotten in touch with the editor-in-chief and president of Sox Prospects now, Mike Andrews, and talked to him. You know, hey, I go to games. I'd like to kind of start doing something where I can start to write about what I see at those games, and we started small, and then it started to really progress, and by the late 2000s, you know, it was becoming really, really popular. And then it really just went from there. And a couple of years ago, Jason Parks reached out to me when he had taken over for Kevin Goldstein and said he was putting a team together, and he wanted to bring me on board. And, you know, from there, now all of a sudden I'm running the team.
Pretty amazing how quickly that's moved, how quickly that's gone. So congratulations again. You mentioned in your first couple of seconds ago that there were some wrinkles that you and Nick were trying to take the prospect coverage. Kind of, where do you see the future of that coverage going at BP?
So if people read the address that Nick and I put out after the announcement, we talked about the structure that we're putting in place, and what we're really doing is trying to get our guys that we have across the country, you know, we have a really strong 10 to 12 person team here, and get them into kind of like organized within the leagues that they cover and within the regions they cover, so that we can have a cross-section across the country and dive into every league and every organization with a little bit more structure for the team. So, for instance, our people on the East Coast, wherever they may be situated, they know exactly kind of the objectives. They know they're covering the Carolina and Sally League or the Eastern League and the International League, and that their responsibility and role is to get across all the teams and the organizations that come into those leagues, cover top to bottom. Because the way Nick and I see it is that, you know, you really don't want to leave, you want to leave no stone unturned. And, you know how this goes with prospect development. It's not always those top buzz names. It's not always those high first round draft picks that are the ones that go off and make an impact at the major leagues. And we feel it's important to organize our structure with our team so that we can get the most horsepower out of them. And I think, you know, the readers are going to start to see some of those players on our team emerge more within the coverage that we have. And in terms of content, we're still kind of going through, you know, our off season. That's the most important thing right now. Our top 10 list will be coming out after the World Series, and our top 100. That's really the focus right now, what we're really starting to, you know, dive into and work. But as we get closer, you know, we're going to have some fall league coverage. And then as we get closer to the season, we're going to be rolling out kind of a more consistent cadence and structure of coverage so that the readers know that, for instance, you know, they obviously know that Monday is the day of the 10-pack, and that's when that Monday morning 10-pack comes out. And then we're going to have content, which we're shooting for all 5 days of the week on prospects, that different things come out each day, and they're centered on, you know, different aspects, whether it's a feature-type article that maybe Nick or I would write, or it's some notes pieces and eyewitness reports, you know, that the team we're all putting together, and then, you know, some kind of, maybe it's a regional report that's hitting on the East, that the happenings in the East from the previous week, or some compilations, and we're going to go, you know, roll it out like that from there.
Well, that sounds outstanding. So you truly are trying to structure it like a, you know, major league scouting farm, you know, development system.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what Nick and I are looking at to continue to push. You know, that's what Jason's original vision was. You know, the first year we were kind of really feeling out the process. You know, I thought we did a pretty good job. We brought new people on as the season was going along. And then at the beginning of last offseason, we brought even more evaluators in, and we really, you know, have a strong, you know, team here. And what we're trying to do is give everybody, you know, be able to funnel information out, be able to flush things out. Now, whether that's, you know, Nick and I being able to see, hey, we haven't really had a ton of coverage on Binghamton this season, but they're coming into the area for the next 2 weeks and they're hitting these spots. Hey, you guys in that region, we'd like you guys to make it a point that you cover that team top to bottom within the next 2 weeks, and then, you know, fill our gaps. That only helps us more with putting together the rankings, the updated top 50, the scouting report, and bringing, you know, one of the things I've always seen at the national level, you know, coming from the team-specific side is that, like, the under-the-radar prospects are the guys that don't kind of get the buzz but suddenly just emerge. It's not because, you know, people are missing them or whatever, but sometimes the bandwidth there or the information is a little bit slow, and I think that with this type of structure and format, we're going to be able to flush out the sleepers, quote-unquote, quicker, because we're covering everything, and we're not just going out and big game hunting and trying to just cover the top 10 prospects of the top 100, for instance. You know, we're trying to get a cross section of every type of prospect, and I think that the readers should, you know, I think that shows in our work this season that we've really tried to show the range on the coverage of prospects that we have, and it doesn't necessarily have to be, quote, a big name to go into a 10-pack or an eyewitness report, that we're really covering prospects top to bottom to get everybody, you know, put that information out there for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I know, you know, most sites struggle and they need to go for the page hits, so you got to cover the top guys, but I find it interesting when you guys will do a report on a 30 player, just because it is nice to see the differences and that there are players, and you'll write up guys that, you know, are probably not going to make the majors. So, go ahead.
And from an evaluation standpoint, you know, from an evaluator, you know, that's important, because in order to strengthen your skills as an evaluator, and, you know, for the people listening, if you're thinking about getting into it and going out at the ballparks and watching guys and writing up what you see, it's important to get a context for the level of players from top to bottom. And just because a player, you know, you put a grade of a 30 on him and you don't think he has a chance to make the major leagues, or he's really, you know, maybe more of a double-A, triple-A guy, the experience of watching that guy and learning and seeing what that means, then you're able to compare it against a guy that, say, you put a 60 on and you say that he's an above average, you think he has a chance to be a first division regular. That only helps you, one, identify that player, you know, quicker or even more and hone your skills. And you don't get into a situation where you're just kind of looking for something and trying to fit something into your evaluations. You open up the spectrum, and it only helps you know, sharpen your skills even more so that when you see a guy, you know exactly what you're trying to focus in on and look for.
Well, and I also hope it helps the reader understand when, you know, writers like myself say that I think somebody's a league average player, that that is not an insult. In fact, it's quite a compliment. So,
yeah, absolutely. That's one of the things that we've always tried to, going back to my days with Sox Prospects, is one of the things that I've always tried to put out there is that a league average player, you know, whether it's an average position player or a fourth or fifth starter at the major league level, that's not a bad thing.
Yeah,
that's a good thing.
That guy's going to make
a very...
Yeah, he's going to make $20 million in his career as a league average player. He's going to be a wealthy man. It's not an insult by any stretch of the imagination.
No, and those are the guys that help teams win divisions and World Series. It's not always... You know how it goes when you watch the playoffs and the World Series. It's not always the superstar player that's the one that picks the team up and puts them on his back and carry it. You know, a lot of times it's that layer of the mid-range average major leaguers that step up. And, you know, just if you think of the World Series last year with the Red Sox versus Cardinals, a guy like Johnny Gomes, who is roughly a league average player, hitting big three-run home run in Game 3, which turned the tide of it. And you can look down at St. Louis' team, too, and how they got to the World Series. You know, some players there that helped them that necessarily weren't the big names or whatever, you know, a guy stepping up and doing his job. And that's where teams, you need above average players, but you need good average players as well to fill in those gaps for the team.
Well, and like you said, you know, most players at that level are 20s and 30s, but sometimes they break out and become major leaguers. So I'm
right.
Excited to see where the prospect coverage goes and just the depthness of what you guys are going to cover. I don't know how to pivot off of some of that stuff, but I do want to talk some prospects and players with you, if I could. Kind of as an expert, particularly on the Red Sox system, I want to get your take on Xander Bogaerts. He had some strong moments in, you know, surrounding a disappointing, I think, 2014 season thus far. You know, but this time last season, he was sparking the Red Sox to the World Series, and he was, you know, the best thing since sliced bread. So, kind of thoughts on his growing pains this season and his future outlook?
Yeah, no, it's definitely been ups and downs. I mean, he came off the playoffs in the World Series where he was the starting third baseman there, and he was batting anywhere from fifth to seventh in that lineup, and he was having good at bats, and he was flashing a little bit of power with, I don't think he had any home runs in the playoffs, but he hit a couple of big doubles, if I remember, and he was having really good at bats. You know, this season, I think what you're seeing is, and what we really try to stress too when we talk about the players, is that the difference between AAA, let alone any other level in the minors and the majors, is huge. That's a big gap, and it's 162 games, and it's really a grind. And what the most difficult thing in the first season of a player, you know, for a player, their rookie season, and talking with players, people who have been through that, guys who have played the game before, you know, their feedback always was is that your first professional season in the minors and your rookie season are the hardest two seasons that you have to deal with. And with Bogaerts, it's a case of, you know, the league is constantly adjusts, and you know, you get into a little bit of a good rhythm, and you're running through some good at bats and making some hard contact. And, you know, in the minors, you can probably ride that wave out for a little while. You know, teams don't necessarily adjust you. Players don't adjust as quickly. But in the big leagues, that can evaporate, you know, in a flash. That can be, you know, one series down the line, suddenly pitchers are pitching you differently and they're not throwing to the spots, and then you have to adjust. And with Bogaerts, that, you know, he got off to a decent start, then he picked it up, and then he had a real bad lull. And now he's starting to show kind of those good at bats again that he was having in the World Series in the beginning of the year, and he's been a little bit in the groove. I think one, it's an example for, you know, how difficult the game of baseball is. My outlook on Bogaerts hasn't really changed. I still see him as a guy who can hit 285 plus at the big league level with power. And he does. He has. You know, if you've watched him in the minors and you've seen him a little bit in the majors, you can see when he does hit the ball and put a charge in it, and he's got that, you know, six plus raw power, in my opinion. You know, it borderlines on seven raw power. And I do think that he can be a guy who can hit 25 to 30 home runs in the big leagues. I mean, he's 21. He won't turn 22 until, I think, a month from now. He's still very young. He was the type of guy that I thought would ramp up over the course of his career. Like, because of how age advanced he was and then hitting the big leagues and where he'd probably fit in with the Red Sox, given that they're, with the exception of this season, you know, usually they're a first division ball club. They're a team that's competing every year for the division title and the World Series, so that they kind of start their young players off lower in the lineup, less responsibility, things like that. Where he's going to ramp up over the course of his career, and when as he gets to his prime, approach those type of numbers.
Is he a shortstop for you long term?
No, he's not a shortstop for me long term. I know there's always been a lot of debate about that. Going back to when he was 17 years old, 18 years old, when I saw him for the first time in fall instructs, and I wrote in the first report I ever wrote on him, I thought that he was going to move over to third base. I still think there's growth left in that in his body, which there are big shortstops and guys with size that play the position. You know, that's kind of always a counterpoint to that. I don't think it's a case that the size is going to be too big, meaning that the size is the issue. It's just that what happens as you get bigger. A player like him, he loses a little bit of athleticism, and he's a guy with about average foot speed. He's about an average runner, and that's at 21. I see right. him, you know, as he's 25 to 28. You know, if he loses it and becomes now a fringe runner, or even a little bit of a below average runner, that's going to take away from his quickness in the field. And I think if anybody's watched, you know, if you've watched him at the major league level, you see that Bogaerts, and he's always been like this since he was at 17. When I first saw him, he goes to his right well. He doesn't really go to his left that great. He's better True. Going with the whole one step into the hole, grab the ball. And he's not as good as ranging towards the bag and at second base. That's kind of always been the case with him. I think, yeah, you see him now, he's okay. He's decent at the position. I'd grade him as about a fringe average short right now, defensive shortstop, 45-ish.
Right.
I don't put a 50 on that. Can he maybe push himself to a 50 for the next couple of seasons? That's sure, that could happen. But I think that over the course of 162 games, and he's going to be a regular, which I believe that he is, that pressure of playing the defense, too, can wear on a player, and he can be in a position where, you know, he's a little bit over his head. And I think, you know, if you look at the game and you look at it from a player development standpoint or from assembling a team, you want to put players in the best chance to succeed and be successful with their tool set and skill set. And, you know, you don't want to have a guy, you know, put him over his head too much because it can affect the other side of the game. And I know he moved over to third base and that kind of coincided with him going into a slump. I really don't buy that narrative that because he moved off the shortstop position, suddenly he stopped hitting.
Right.
I think that's more product of advanced scouting and video and the fact that, you know, teams were able to expose Bogaerts this season with breaking balls away, and then watching him, he became more reactionary and less confident than letting it loose against fastballs because he was trying to protect against breaking balls for a while. And if you've watched him recently, you've seen that now he's letting it fly again on fastballs, and he's more comfortable laying off the, especially sliders. That's what teams were giving him, a lot of sliders away and across his line of sight.
Well, and like you pointed out, he's still 21, so he's learning
right.
at the big league level. So
he's got a lot of runway here to go, you know?
Yeah. So another maybe a prospect that I want to talk to you about is Manuel Margot. I sat
yeah,
on
okay.
him about, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks ago when he was in Frederick. Salem was playing Frederick, and he blew me away. I mean, I had obviously recognized his name, and Sherrington and the guys mentioned him at Sabre Seminar about as a prospect to watch, but he blew me away in that series. Can you kind of talk to the audience and myself a little bit about Margot?
Sure. Margot, like Bogaerts, was an international signing. He was signed a few years ago. He played a season in the Dominican Summer League. And then he came over. I saw his first instructs when I was down there covering Boston, Baltimore, the Twins in Tampa. I saw two seasons ago. I saw his first instructs. He came over, and the first thing that sticks out is the defensive skill. You know, he he's got excellent foot speed. He's a very good runner. He's a 7.70 runner. I've got him down around 4.11-ish towards first base, and he accelerates even better when he makes that turn and goes from first to third. He definitely has the speed and the athleticism and the reflexes to play center field. The arm, I've seen some people go as high as saying that he has an above average arm. I'd put his arm somewhere around the 50, maybe a 55 when he airs it out. He's more, from whatever everything that I've seen, he's about an average thrower. But his arm is better now than it was when he first, when he was 17 or 18. I would say his arm was about fringe average, and he's definitely putting on more strength. That goes to my next point, the body. He's a lean body type, he's the type of lean body type that can put on wiry muscle. And what I saw when I saw him in spring training when I hit Fort Myers up for a few days before I went out to Arizona for the week this past year, the physical development was there, that you could see that he had a little bit more definition and the body was filling out. It's not a body, in my opinion, that's going to blow up, and the added weight or the added muscle is going to put a damper or a dent into his athleticism. I don't see him, I don't see him as that type of guy. I see him as a guy that can be, a physical specimen or very athletically kind of like a BJ Upton type, body, like a really nice athletic.
I mean, he really looks the part. I mean, if you were drawing it up, he looks sexy. I mean, it's a nice profile.
Right. Exactly, it's a really nice profile. And then his biggest asset as a hitter are his hands. He's got extremely loose hands, and when I say that, a player having loose hands, that means he can pull them inside real easily to stay inside the baseball and keep his hands in so that he can rifle the head of the bat through on inside pitches and also pull his hands in on the balls that are away from him so that he can hit them to the other way with authority rather than slicing them off and kind of flaring and dinking them out. I see him as a gap-to-gap hitter. I think the power, he has some surprising raw power for a player his size, kind of for a player his profile. Even when he was, I remember when he was 18 years old, I saw him, at BP, he could hit the wall, and he was hitting the wall on the fly, surprising you, because when you see those real young and raw players, that their BP doesn't always play up well. Sometimes it's a lot of dinky hits, flares, and guys aren't even, medium-depth fly balls. He definitely would put a charge into the ball. That said, he's more like at his peak, and if everything continues to click with his power, like a 15-ish home run guy.
Right.
He's not a monster guy, but he's a high contact player. He has excellent back control because of those hands. He's not a big guy who swings and misses through fastballs. He's getting better with staying off the front foot with breaking balls. I see him as a high contact guy. I go as high as six on his hit tool. I think he could hit in the 290s eventually, if everything clicks. More of a top of the order type guy for me, maybe a first or second place hitter. But that's a good thing. I don't see him. He's not a middle of the order to that fifth, sixth type hitter. But I think he's a high contact table setter who can plug gaps and hit you some double. Hit you double. I could foresee a line from him as a second batter or even a leadoff batter. 290, 40, 35-ish doubles, maybe 40 because of his speed, 15 home runs. He could steal 20, 25 bases and play you in above-average center field. I think that's a six. That's an above-average player right there.
Yeah, I mean, I he's an asset in all three phases of the game to me and can change the game in all three phases. Top-of-the-order hitter, like you said. I was blown away. I think he's a top 50 prospect in baseball right now. Maybe I'm high on him, but I'm blowing him up. I love the kid.
We'll see. I mean, when we stack the Red Sox system up, he'll definitely be a guy towards the front of that system.
Yeah, and that's a stacked system.
I don't know where he'll definitely spot in yet, but he's in the discussion. The one thing that I get, one thing you don't want to get to the promotion to Salem. I know that he put up a pretty good line. If you just look at him from a box score perspective, a lot of people were asking me and saying, "Oh, it looks like he's really breaking out." Not 100% sure. This is, I think, next season's really where you could have the full-fledged breakout. This was a good step towards, for development. And the one thing is that with the Carolina League, because it's a small league, I think it's only eight teams there, is that what I usually see with players that hit the Carolina League is that because they're seeing teams so often, you know, that guys, you know, they play the team so much that guys do get familiar with players, and that it is tough sometimes. You're going to see that adjustment period, potentially, where for the first 200 play appearances, the guy kind of comes up and he's tearing the cover off the ball, and then for the next 200 play appearances, it's a little bit more pulled back and reserved. So you have to evaluate that league. He'll definitely be in the. He'll definitely start next season in the Carolina League with Salem again, and I do think that he has a strong chance to finish the season in Double A. You know, whether that's a mid-season promotion or that maybe that's a promotion sometime around August or whatever. But I do think that when 2015 finishes, that Manuel Margot will finish that season in Double A.
Well, and you made a great point about the Carolina League. I watch a ton of games there just with Frederick and Potomac, and you're right. The first 200 at-bats are one thing. It's once the pitchers start to adjust and the league gets a little worried about you is when you need to look. So, but I agree with you.
Yeah, it's an interesting league. It's one of the most interesting leagues out there, I think, in terms of that, because they play the team so frequently, and sometimes they'll play, you know, Salem will play Winston-Salem the week, and then they play another team, and then they're right back playing another four-game series against each other the week later. And you know, with the other league, sometimes with the Sally League or whatever, more teams, you know, you see the games against the teams more spaced out, where there can be more player turnover, or they just in the back of their head, they don't remember, the pitcher doesn't remember that guy. But in the Carolina League, it's like, well, hey, I just faced that guy last week, and he tagged a fastball, you know, middle in on me. I'm not giving him one this time around. Let's see if he can hit the fastball away, or let's throw more breaking balls. You know, that's just because they're so familiar with the players.
Yeah, it's one of the main reasons why I like watching the Carolina League so much, is because you can watch in the beginning of the season and the end of the season, and you can see the development on both sides of the...
Exactly.
You know, so, well, another player that I wanted to ask you about is Eduardo Rodriguez. Obviously, I've watched him a ton the last couple seasons, with him being at Frederick and then at Bowie. Struggled a little bit this year, but... I was still a little surprised that he was given up in a trade for 2 months of Andrew Miller. Thoughts on Rodriguez and, you know, maybe that deal now 6 weeks kind of in our hindsight?
Yeah, I mean, that was an interesting trade. You know, it's funny. I saw Rodriguez when he came through New Hampshire with Bowie. I made it a point to get there, and I wanted to see him. And I was lucky enough that it worked out, and I actually was able to see him with Bowie, and I think that was his second or third start off the DL. He was matched up against Aaron Sanchez that night, and Rodriguez, you know, watching him independent, the fastball was a little flat that first time I saw him. The changeup was okay, and the slider, you know, I could see the slider as a potential 55 pitch, but his fastball velocity, he was 91 to 94 that outing, but the pitch was a little bit flat, and
okay.
He cruised through the first couple innings, and then he ran to a third inning where it was, you know, he just couldn't get anybody out, and he ended up only going three innings in that, and it looked like he really lost his rhythm. Now, I mention that because I saw him right after the trade. I actually did see, I caught his first start with Portland, I was looking to follow up on that first start I saw, and the stuff was about a half a notch to a notch above where it was back the first time I saw him. His fastball was anywhere from 91 to 96. He actually, he topped up at 96 twice.
Wow.
And his fastball, the first start that I saw him, he was more like 91 to 93 in terms of the sit. In the start, the second start I saw him, he was more 92, 93, 94 consistently, and a lot of 93s.
Wow,
with his fastball,
okay.
I think he ended up pitching through six innings, but his fastball was better. There was a little bit more movement. It is more of a straight fastball for me. He does have some tail and some onside run to it when he throws it away.
There's a little more wiggle at 91, too, than there is at 94, 95, too.
Yeah, and then, the slider was still the same when I... You know, but the changeup was better in the second start, and I could really see that changeup, even though it's on the firm side, it's 84 to 86, and there's not huge, you know, there's, you know, 6-7 miles an hour separation from his fastball, but it had more, and he was getting a lot more swings and misses and weak contact with it than the guy's just laying off of it. So, for me, I had him, you know, when I wrote him up, I saw him as about you know, the potential is a 55, you know, about a 55 player, you know, realistic, a 50, you know, realistically a league average player, probably a back end of the rotation guy. But my second start kind of gave me that more confidence that he's closer to achieving that realistic, and he potentially can, depending on how the situation is, maybe, you know, play up to that 55 type player at the big league. I don't see an above average player there. I don't see consistent middle of the rotation, like a third starter, like a true third starter. But I think he's a guy that can log innings. He's got a pretty good body. I think he's got the stuff to stick as a starter, and he could be like a pretty good fourth starter. I think he could be, for the Red Sox organization, what they thought Felix DuBrant was going to be for them, that supplementary starter in a rotation, a guy who, he's not your front guy, but he's going to give you 200 innings. He's going to battle. He's going to make his starts, and he can be successful in a lot of those starts. I think that's where Rodriguez, to me, he settles in right now.
Yeah, I've always seen Rodriguez as a guy who, like you said, is more of a number four with a couple of guys in front of him, but you look up and, you know, he's had an 8-year career where he's run up, you know, 1,200, 1,400 innings, you know, gives you 160, 180 a year and is just a solid player. You know,
right.
That's got a lot of value.
And you know exactly what you're going to get from him. You know, he's the type of guy where I think you know what you're going to get from him. Yeah, there's going to be some bad starts. There's always bad starts. And he's probably going to look pretty bad in those bad starts, just because on nights when he doesn't have his stuff, because his stuff isn't that top-tier type stuff, he's not going to have anything. Right? But then there's going to be, you know, those nights where his stuff's really clicking, and I think that's what that start I saw, the second start I saw, was an outing where that's his stuff at the peak, and it was pretty good, and it looked good. He was missing bats, and I think that translates, you know, those with Double A and the hitters. To me, you know, there's a huge gap between Double A hitters and Major League hitters, obviously, but I could see that type of stuff. I could see the stuff translating against the Major League pitchers, because he was moving the ball against Major League hitters. He was moving the ball in and out of the strike zone. He was starting his changeup up at the right spot within the eye level, and then he was using the slider to change the angle on hitters. And I think he knows how to pitch. It's just going to be those situations where when he doesn't have his stuff again, it's just going to be, you know, his stuff's a tick above average, you know, slightly above average is what his level of stuff is. It's not well above average. So when a well above average pitcher doesn't have his best stuff, it plays down, but he can still get by because he can grind and grit, and his stuff's still pretty good. It's just not where it usually is.
Yeah,
he's gonna have to battle and make adjustments and everything like that. But I think it's a major league arm for me. It's a guy that we could see in the major leagues as early as his next season. I think he, you know, health provided good health and everything like that. You could see. I think he's gonna start the year in AAA next year. That looks like that's gonna be where he'll start. He'll be in that Pawtucket rotation. And anything, when you're in the Pawtucket rotation and you're a young arm, or, you know, even some of the more depth guys they bring over, you always get a chance to make the major league rotation. So he's a step away from getting a shot in the majors, and I think that's going to come next year.
Yeah, he's been a long time favorite of mine, and I was frankly surprised the Orioles included him. For, I mean, Miller's been a beast for them, and he gives them a nice weapon going towards the playoffs, but I was surprised they gave him
up. Well, they're going to win. Right, and Andrew Miller was a proven player. He pitched well for the Red Sox out of the bullpen for his career, and he pitched well in the playoffs, and he's a proven commodity. And sometimes, you know, the Orioles, and maybe it's going to be a short window for that team, they feel like, and they're in a position where they're going to get themselves into the playoffs, and they're trying to win. And I never see fault with that. You know, maybe, you know, people can say maybe they gave up a little bit too much. Yeah, maybe they did. But if it's a chance to win, and we see how it goes, you know, Boston last year wins the World Series, this year they're in last place. Like, it can change like that, right? They were in last place. They were terrible the season before.
That's a terrific point.
And then they win the World Series. So it's like, you don't know where your window is, and you don't know when you're catching that lightning in the bottle and everything's going well for you, and you have that team together and everybody's kind of gelled. Sometimes you got to give up a little bit more to get that piece that you feel like is going to put you over the hump, and it's possible that that's what they felt like, that Andrew Miller was going to put some strength in their bullpen, and they're going to need him come down the stretch, and they're going to need him in the playoffs when they've got an eighth inning situation where there's a jam, and you got to get a guy in that can get quality outs and get good hitters out.
Yeah, and he is a terrific addition to that team. He does make them a lot better. I'll give you, and that's, there's no doubt about that. So. Before I let you go, I would be remiss if I didn't get a few thoughts on you on the Nationals farm system, seeing as how this is the Nats GM show. Just a couple of quick rapid-fire questions, if I can.
Sure.
First one, who do you prefer, Michael Taylor or Steven Souza?
Good question. I'll take Taylor.
How come?
I like the power. I know he's a little bit of a raw hitter or whatnot, but I think he's a guy. I think he's a guy that can play up a little bit at the major league level, and run into some pitches. Hit the ball with some thunder, and play the outfield as well.
Okay. Second question, and I'm tempting you a little bit here: AJ Cole or Ronaldo Lopez?
Wow. Well, our own Tucker Blair has seen Ronaldo Lopez a few times, or at least once, and he's starting to blow him up. And Tucker's saying that he's the best player that no one's talking about right now. Cole's always been intriguing to me.
I think he's
quietly he was a top 50 prospect for us. And he was, I want to say we had him second or third in the system coming into the season. I can't 100% remember where we had him, but he was definitely in the top couple guys. And no one really talked. I mean, it's almost like kind of flies on the radar for a guy to me that, has the makings of a mid-rotational starter at the major league level.
It feels like a little prospect fatigue with Cole, almost.
Yeah.
Like he's been on the radar too long.
Right, and I think, he got traded a couple times back and forth there. I'm gonna go with Cole, but I'm gonna preface it that the reason why I'm going with Cole is because I'm looking at it at who's a guy that's gonna, would help my team out over the next couple of years as opposed to, down the line. And I'll go with Cole because he's a little bit more of a certainty, and I'm not saying that Lopez here isn't a guy who can continue to track and whatnot, but with the risk of young pitchers and whatnot, there's still, let's see him continue to get innings under his belt and develop the stuff and how it continues to translate against hitters. I'll go with Cole in this instance, but hey, a year from now, it could be that Lopez has had shoulders above him, but Cole's my choice.
All right, sounds good. Next question, who's your favorite sleeper in the system right now?
Well, I was going to say Lopez because everything that's going on with him, I think he's a guy that, I think he's going to be well represented in the offseason when we start going through the rankings discussions.
I mean, he's got to be top five, right? It's got to be.
The thing is when we go through this process, we get all the information out there and we start combing through it and looking through the recommendations and then, with our team and then cross-checking through sources. Yeah, he's going to be up there.
He's got to be ahead of Goodwin. He's got to be ahead of Souza.
Yeah.
So it's kind of in that range.
Yeah, I think he could be there. He could be definitely in that top five range, and he could definitely be, I think he's definitely going to be in the discussion for the top 101.
Wow.
Somewhere maybe in that, I don't want to commit to it, but that 75 to 101 range, right? I think he's going to be in the conversation for it. Tucker Blair has a very good eye.
Tucker's great. I had him on the show a couple weeks ago. He's a absolutely beast.
He's been talking
beast.
Him up.
Yeah.
He's been talking him up. He was telling me, we talk a lot, we're texting back and forth, and he was telling me he's got to go see this guy Lopez. I said, yeah, make it a priority. Go see him. See him when you can. And then he was texting me during the start. He was like, this guy's really, this is a sleeper. This guy's good. He's coming out of nowhere. And then he wrote him up pretty strong, and he's been the guy back on here. So I definitely think he's going to be well represented. Top five, it sounds about right. And some kind, potentially somewhere in that top 101 as well. Because it's funny because the stuff, originally when he came over, he was kind of in the low 90s, right? And he was, they made some tweaks with mechanics and whatnot. It seems like it's really taken. And now his fastball, exploded out of his hand somewhere 95 to 97.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because I saw his start, one of his two starts early in the season at Hagerstown, and, he was 91 to 93, and, there was some stuff there, but it wasn't anything to kind of knock your socks off, so to speak. And then the next thing I knew, I was getting texts like you are. Who's this guy Lopez? He's throwing at 100. And I was like, not from what I've seen, but apparently he is.
Right, so, right. And then, you know, and he was injured, so he didn't kind of get that buzz through the New York Penn League. Now, we have to see. Sometimes guys, you know, have their velocity spike for whatever reason, and then it can dip back down. So we do have to see going into next season, you know, when he's in there. You know, at the next step up, how that's trending, you know, over the course, you know, you probably pitch, you know, can you get, you know, maybe 120 innings out of him, depending on progression or whatnot, and how does that stuff look from, you know, in April, how does that stuff look in July, how does it look in September? So it's one thing just to keep in mind sometimes that spike in velocity can be for any reason, and then sometimes that they just can't seem to get it back, you know, it just kind of goes back down. But I think he's for real. You know, there's still risk here with this player. We don't want to get too ahead of ourselves and so far forward on him that we overrate him a little bit. But, you know, he's definitely for real.
Yeah, I mean, that is a good point. We are talking about, what, 12 to 15 starts maybe? So that's a good point. So, all right, well, Chris, I can't thank you so much for taking so much time on a Saturday morning, you know, to join me and talk some baseball. I'd love to give you a spot here just to you know, plug your Twitter, plug everything you're doing, and kind of talk about where people can find you.
Sure. So you can find me on Twitter at Chris Mellon, and that's M-E-L-L-E-N. That's all one word, C-H-R-I-S-M-E-L-L-E-N. You know, I'm always out there at Baseball Perspective. What we're doing, you know, we're kind of not ramping it down, but we're in a slight lull here where we're still going to have our 10 packs and some eyewitness reports. But coming up, we have a bunch of, you know, we have a contingency of guys heading out to the Arizona Farm with Fall League, which is going to be pretty good. They're going to be out there for a week. That's going to be coming up in October, as well as the off-season stuff. And that's really what I'm starting to get excited about at the top 10 list and the top 101. You know, you'll see those start to run sometime, I believe, after the World Series, and we'll be, I think the Nationals, if I remember the schedule, the Nationals will be pretty early in that run, so you guys won't have to wait too long to get that Nationals top 10 list out there and start chewing on it and shooting me questions and telling me that I'm crazy for putting this guy there, or I should have this guy there in this place, but it'll be fun.
Well, that sounds great. I'm glad we don't have to wait too long, because last year I think we had to wait until after the new year for our Nats prospect list. So thank you so much, Chris, for sharing some time with me this morning and being so generous and talking some prospects.
No problem, Ryan. Have a good one.
You too. Thank you so much.